Looking for strategies to help you protect your portfolio in these uncertain times? Visit robblack.com. robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
I always love having CFP Chad Burton from EP Wealth on the show. We have a big event coming up May 9th in Palo Alto at the Elks Lodge, Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30. Wealth Preservation Retirement Planning. It's my favorite seminar that he puts on for us. It covers all the basics of retirement and some of the details that you're probably forgetting. And when I say basics, it's not basic stuff. Doing it right probably will mean a difference of an extra 3% in your retirement portfolio over time. It's very valuable. That adds up on a year-over-year basis. Gives you a little extra scratches. You're aging into, I guess, oblivion. That's kind of depressing. But a big event Thursday night, Palo Alto, Elks Lodge. Our favorite venue because of great parking, central location, easy to get to, lots of restaurants close by. Tax planning, retirement costs, portfolio transitioning. Investment accounts, Social Security, retirement products, IRAs, 401ks, and estate planning. Those are the basics of, you know, you have to get those all put together correctly. But like even tax planning doesn't say it all. Tax efficiency is what I love about what Chad does. Chad, how are you today?
I am well, Rob. How are you?
People can sign up for the event at chadburton.com or robblackshow.com. It's robblackshow.com. Chad, let's talk passive investing versus active investing. What do those two terms mean to you?
Well, passive investing is essentially just investing in index funds, right? So the S&P 500, for example, is an index, and then they have mutual funds. There are several different types that copy the index where they always have the same holdings as the index. So the S&P 500 is the largest 500 companies in America.
Yep.
But it's market cap weighted, as we've been talking about on many shows. And so the idea is that just be the market, right? The market takes really good care of us over time. If you look at the S&P 500 over the last 50 years or so, ending 12/31/23, average return is over 11%. It's positive something like 74, 76% of the time. And so why fight it? Just be part of the overall market. But that's just the S&P 500. There's also like a well-known small cap index would be the Russell 2000, which is small and mid cap. And then there's all sorts of different versions of the index. So the idea is that they create some sort of a metric like the S&P 500, the largest 500 companies in America, or the Russell 2000, you know, companies that aren't the largest 500, but there's more. So, and those indexes typically only change one time a year where they'll kick some stocks out and put some new ones in. And so the idea is that you just start investing. They're very tax efficient, so they're great for, you know, outside of a retirement account, and you just own a little bit of everything. Whereas passive investing, you're either trying to achieve more growth by being early into different areas of investing, whether it's like AI or, you know, the whole issue of energy in the country and, you know, solar, whatever it may be. So you're trying to get in early to outperform the indexes, or you're trying to get into products or investments that are similar to the index, but maybe you're trying to get less volatility and less risk in the portfolio. So an example of active investing, you might have a very growth oriented investor that is a growth fund, excuse me, that's looking for that next really good investment. Whereas you might have a value investor, which is more of a patient. I'm going to buy a company at a discount. I'm going to buy a company that's in turnaround mode. And the idea is that I'll be paid off more over a 3 to 5 year period. So they kind of both sound attractive, right, Rob? And the idea for me is that I actually like both active and passive and putting them into a portfolio together.
It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah. And some people are just like, oh, index only, index only. Well,
yeah.
I would argue now that the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are the most similar that I've seen in the 30 years that I've been doing this. They're also the most concentrated that I've ever seen. So the top 10 holdings of the S&P 500 are about 80% technology between tech and communication services, which is really tech to me. And so if you're in the S&P 500, it used to be a blend large cap growth fund where it's a mix of value and growth.
Yeah.
Now it's mostly growth. So if you're adding a growth fund to the S&P 500 fund that you might already own, you might be overdoing growth and totally missing out on value or dividend growth or small cap or international, things like that.
What do you think of the statement that I heard yesterday that one third of the total return on the S&P 500 over time is via dividends? And yet in the last 10 years, it's only been about 15% of the return on the S&P 500 because what you mentioned, the large cap companies that are tech haven't been paying much of a dividend. Any thoughts on the dividends from active and passive investing in S&P 500s?
Yeah, it's so first of all, that's when you look at the total returns that we talk about, that assumes every single dividend gets used to buy more shares. It's called dividend reinvestments. It's very important, especially for younger investors that are, hey, I'm going to go on a Fidelity or Schwab account and I'm going to invest in a Roth IRA or a regular account and I'm going to buy an ETF or any kind of a fund. We'll talk about ETFs in a little bit, but having those dividends reinvested is everything. I mean, it's a huge part. When you look at a chart of the S&P 500 over the last 10 years, just on a price movement versus what's called total return, which is the dividends being reinvested, it's drastically different. So dividends are very important. When you're building wealth, you want those reinvested. When you hit the point of retirement, that is a main source of income. It's passive income. And we love these reports that we have that show, here's your portfolio of, you know, let's say 30 positions. And this is whether they pay a dividend on a quarterly basis, a monthly basis, and how much you can expect in passive income. That's going to come typically in even in bad markets. And that's a very important part of distribution planning. And so, you know, swinging to that idea of dividend paying stocks, but not, I mean, there's some stocks, Rob, that you got to be really careful of the what's called the payout ratio. How much are they paying out of their free cash flow to support the dividend? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes these companies just to support a dividend are highly leveraged and they might have a yield of 5 or 6%. So it's like people in retirement are like, oh, let's go after this. But then they're highly leveraged, massive amount of debt. I would rather have a growth, a company that's still growing revenue. Maybe they only have a 2.5% dividend, but they have a history of raising their dividend by 10% a year. So if you get some growth and some income, that is the bread and butter for retirement right there.
We don't have a lot of time, so give me some time to plug the seminar. But are some funds or ETFs a mix of passive and active?
Yeah, that's where you get that idea of smart beta, where you take an index and then you throw rules on top of it. Like I'm going to look at the S&P 500. I'm going to put a couple of rules of price to sales, price to book, payout ratio, and dividend growth. And I'm going to pick those stocks out of that. So for example, dividend investing, you and I have been talking about, you know, dividend achievers for years and years. Wonderful. That's been a very successful strategy for retirees.
What about ETFs versus index funds, or should we hold that to the next segment?
Yeah, it's that one's getting interesting because most ETFs are index funds. ETFs are just structured differently, better tax-wise. We'll talk about that. But a lot of mutual funds are now becoming ETFs, Rob. It gets a little confusing. Yeah.
Interesting. Bastardization. Anyhow, big event coming up May the 9th. That's next week, next Thursday. Super convenient local event. Palo Alto, May the 9th, 6:30 to 8:30. I'll be there a good hour early. I'll stay a good hour late. Maybe I'll even get there a little bit earlier and grab a late lunch. You can sign up for the event, tax planning, retirement costs, investment account, social security. Sign up at chadburton.com. It's chadburton.com. It is the preeminent best event we do, the wealth preservation and retirement planning. Sign up at Rob Black Show or chadburton.com.
Maybe you feel like you're in good shape for retirement, but have you really taken everything into account? Find out how you're really doing at a wealth preservation and retirement planning event May 9th in Palo Alto, hosted by Rob Black and CFP Chad Burton of EP Wealth Advisors. Rob will provide timely commentary, and Chad will share specific strategies for taxes, income, long-term care, safe money, retirement products, alternative investments, estate protection goals, and more. If you have at least $500,000 in investable assets and want to retire better, pass on your estate, and minimize taxes, this event is for you. Find out if you're on the right track at this free wealth preservation and retirement planning event. That's Thursday evening, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Space is limited, so sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.
I'm always happy to have CFP Chad Burton on air with me. Used to be more fun when we're in studio together. when we could make eye contact, but this will do. Some small notes that I want to throw out there. Domino's, their quarter was pretty good quarter, but when that tells me something, it's telling me in particular, the economy's struggling. Their carryout boost special, 50% off, week-long discount is driving sales. And then I saw today that grocery stores, in a Wall Street Journal article, Americans are shooting up their grocery spending habits kind of crazy. We visit 20.7 stores per year to buy groceries, up from 16.8 just 3 or 4 years ago. And that's interesting because we're kind of hunting and gathering the cheap deals is what it tells me. So economy is a little bit tougher out there. CFP Chad Burton, big event coming up Thursday, May 9th, just a couple of days after May the 4th. Be with you. This is May the 9th. It's retirement planning and estate planning and retirement wealth preservation. Big event, nice event. You do a great job with these great slides. Lots of information, lots of questions answered. People can sign up at robblackshow.com or chadburton.com, robblackshow.com or chadburton.com. Chad, let's talk wealth management versus just using an investment advisor. I get this question often that they did it on their own with their 401k. They got some wealth. They hired an investment advisor. I used to be a registered investment advisor. Then I met you and I was like, there's a bigger picture. And Chad kind of dominates the bigger picture. I always thought of investment advisors kind of became a bullet shot, whereas you're a big picture versus bullet shot. Am I kind of summing that up correctly?
Yeah. And part of it is, you know, like how AI is changing the world. I mean, the web and technology changed the world of investment advising, right? So I kind of saw it really early on, luckily. And the idea of commission-based products where people go to, hey, I want to get financial advice, but then they get sold insurance or annuities or, you know, garbage products. That was already starting to be under attack. It's still going on these days. But and then the idea that, okay, eventually people started to transition to charging, you know, let's say 1.5-2% a year to manage a portfolio in a specific pie chart, like a certain amount of large cap, small cap, mid cap, international bonds, all of those types of investments. But then technology changed and it made our lives in the world of investing easier, right? So I could still picture in my mind 30 years ago, and we have to figure out what was inside of a mutual fund and what we wanted to add to what the manager was doing with the fund. We had to wait for the Morningstar. It looked like a magazine made out of a newspaper, right? It was kind of like this yellow paper with printed on both sides. It was just, you know, that's what we had to figure out, what was inside of funds. So do we want to rebalance portfolio? What did the manager buy or sell or whatever? Eventually that, after the internet, that was all at our fingertips and information was everywhere. And then with technology on managing portfolios, we can have technology set parameters that says, okay, hey, this person all of a sudden has too much large cap or not enough bonds, and it will alert us. And then we go in and trade. So what people should be getting now, if they're paying, you know, 1% or more for a portfolio, is not just the investing side. That side's the easy side, right? That's only about maybe 30% of what we do. As certified financial planner to practitioners, you deal with, let's see, things like retirement planning, right? How do you go from accumulating wealth, reinvesting those dividends, adding to your portfolio, adding to your 401k, building up a taxable account? Then you have to start drawing on it and making it last forever. So it's distribution planning, answering the question, do you have enough to retire to deal with inflation and healthcare costs and different types of markets and economies? Do you have a safe amount of retire? And that's a big one that, you know, you can have a pie chart and a portfolio, but if it doesn't run tax analysis, if they don't run simulations of different markets, simulations of needing healthcare costs in retirement, all of that, you know, has to be part of that fee that you're paying. So, you know, retirement planning, business planning and exit strategies, constant tax projections, charitable planning, real estate issues, which is huge in California right now, insurance strategies, all of that. That's really, even though you're paying based on the portfolio and what is being managed, you should be getting a lot more out of that. That's true wealth management.
So I'm looking at a recent study that says working with a fiduciary financial advisor, i.e. a CFP, will end up getting about 15% more money to spend in retirement if they can get you basically 3% more per year in returns than the average person. How much of that 3% do you think is not making mistakes versus doing things brilliantly? Is that a fair question?
That's an interesting article, because it's, you know, the market's going to do what it's going to do, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take really good care of us over time, but you do have to have rules in your portfolio of when you rebalance, mm-hmm. When you peel off and sell and pay some taxes on potentially on what you have too much of and then reinvest it into something that's cheaper. So that idea of I'm paying or a fee, I'm going to drastically outperform the market. No, it's really you're creating the portfolio that's right for your situation and sticking to the rules of when you rebalance after, you know, market run-ups or market declines. And the benefits really come, especially in the down years of the market. What happens? Either performing much better on the downside or rebalancing on the downside and taking advantage of those dips, keeping people either in their seats when the market is going through a rough time, or keeping people from investing with FOMO, you know, the fear of missing out and making major mistakes. So try to go in all in and all out. Those are huge mistakes that people make. And then just tax issues. A lot of times we can find ways to save money on taxes or reduce taxes over a longer period of time in order to, you know, offset those fees in the portfolio. So it's part of that headline that you just read is correct. The other part, that 3%, I'm not sure, you know, where they're trying to get that front number from.
I'll send it to you. It's a Northwestern mutual survey. So it's pretty interesting stuff. We only have about a minute left. So why don't you plug the seminar for a second or two, and then I'll plug it again.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to go over more on, you know, how should a portfolio be set up in retirement? How do you transition from that accumulation phase to the distribution phase? And thinking about taxes, right? How do you keep your taxes lower for longer versus I got to pay the least amount of taxes this year? That mindset has to switch a little bit. And dealing with taxes also deals with how do you leave money to your heirs, right? What's the best way to do this if you're trying to concentrate on family wealth? How do you keep taxes lower for you, but also for your family? And how do you make assets last multiple generations potentially?
People can sign up for the event Thursday, May 9th. Coming up at CFP, chadburton.com. It's chadburton.com or Rob Black Show. It's May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30. Wealth preservation, retirement planning. Sign up today, chadburton.com.
This interview featured on the Rob Black Show is brought to you by EP Wealth. Learn more at robblack.com.
So 25 years ago, I met CFP Chad Burton. And like I alluded to earlier in the show, I was a registered investment advisor. I could do portfolios in my mind better than anyone else. The problem was I couldn't do things like charitable planning, getting kids into college funding issues, insurance strategies, real estate issues. I had the mind of a 25-year-old kid, so to speak. So I wasn't quite there with all my developed financial ideas that a CFP has and practices, whether it be alternative income streams from, you know, dividends or alternative real estate, alternative debt, alternative equities. There's a lot going on there, and there's a lot of products to kind of piece together to make everything, all the levers work at the same time. And it's quite a machine when it is working all at the same time. Chad, another thing that I can't do is estate planning. I needed your guidance to help me with some ideas on my own personal estate. Let's talk about estate planning, changes that are coming up, and what are your thoughts on estate planning as part of a financial plan?
Yeah, well, you're talking about the changes that are coming up. I think that's what stalls a lot of people as they hear about different things in the news. For example, there was a big change in estate tax law in 2017, but that expires in 2026. And so everybody, in terms of really advanced estate planning, Rob, which is setting up trust for your spouse or kids while you're alive,
yep,
and, you know, doing these irrevocable type trusts and other tax planning, everybody's kind of on hold until after the November elections. But at the same time, if you want to be able to act on something that's going to expire by the end of 2025, you need to get teed up and be into that relationship with that attorney now, because they're going to be slammed. Like they probably will have a tough time getting to anybody new versus the people that they've already done some planning for. So do not hold off on your core documents. So if you're listening in a state like California or Oregon, where probate is very expensive and time consuming, it's very important to have a living trust. And so a lot of people think of a living trust, so it must be for tax purposes. Really, it's more for what happens to you if you're incapacitated but still alive and need help, right? So think of mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, both in a nursing home. Who's handling their financial affairs? Who steps in and takes over? So the core documents are going to be a living trust and a power of attorney, and that allows people to step in. So a living trust is going to help people step in to deal with non-retirement account issues, where a power of attorney is still needed to deal with like your retirement accounts. Okay. So a living trust is essentially a document that says, if I'm incapacitated, this is who takes over. If I die, this is who gets the money. And the main idea of it is to also avoid probate costs, which are very expensive in especially California. And so, you know, if you're spending, you know, $3,500, $4,500 on a living trust that has a healthcare directive, power of attorney, and a will, it's going to save your heirs a lot more than that in terms of attorney's fees and court costs and things like that. So
before the pandemic, I heard probate costs were roughly $50,000. I have to imagine they're more now. And that's just something you automatically go through to determine, like, make sure that your house was your house and it wasn't in someone else's name or something like that. And no one has liabilities, claims against you. So anyway, finish your thought.
Yeah. And states have certain, you know, amounts that they allow to charge per the value of the state. But it's the gross value of the state, Rob. So you could have a $5 million estate, right? In level, where it's a house and some investment accounts. But let's say that the $3 million house has a $2 million loan. You're still paying probate costs on the $3 million house. It's not $3 million minus the $2 million. So it's kind of a pain. It's a bit of a racket, but it is what it is. And you got to deal with it. And the best part of those documents, like I said, is really what happens if you need help while you're alive. Because a lot of people get into that situation. And so the main documents that everybody needs is a living trust that says, this is what happens if I pass away. And this is what happens if I need help while I'm alive. You still have a will, which basically says, if I forgot to put anything in the trust, put it in when I die. Or sometimes you can have specific things like, I want my car to go to so-and-so, and, you know, personal items, those types of things. But you also need a power of attorney, because that's for, especially for retirement accounts, and then a healthcare directive, which is what happens if you need care, you know, pulling the plug, being on life support, those types of things. And so you've got to make a lot of those decisions. It's harder when you're younger, right? Because when you're younger, you're like, who's going to handle my kids? If both of us pass away and I have young children, who's going to be the guardian for my children? And then who, if I'm leaving them money in the form of, let's say I saved in a retirement account or I have a life insurance policy, who's going to handle the money? And even, you know, when I first had the first of my four kids, it was, okay, who's going to handle the kids? Well, that was an easy issue. It'd be my mom, but I wouldn't have her handle the money, for example. So it'd be, you know, somebody else was going to step in and be the trustee on the assets that I leave them. And so a lot of times that's the most difficult conversation that you're having when you're married with younger kids. Is it, no, it's my brother, my sister. No, it's going to be my brother or my sister. And then, well, wait, they're terrible with money, but great with kids. So that you've got to talk those things through so that you can get these documents done. But the important thing is once they're done and they're really easy to change and update. So once you have a living trust and a will and all these documents, you can do amendments. If something changes, you have more children, you get a divorce or what, you can do amendments. And so once you do these things, it's not written in stone forever. They're called revocable living trusts because you can totally get rid of them if you want to. And you can change them whenever you want. So even though the estate tax laws change in 2026, that's not going to change the core documents that everybody needs. So they should get it done now. That way you already have a relationship with an attorney. And so if you are very wealthy, and that's typically, you know, couples that are over 13 million, let's say right now, then you'll be teed up and ready to go to do advanced estate planning to save taxes based on what happens to the law in 2026.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up the, you know, who do you make the parent of your kids? And we had an obvious one with my wife's sister, but I didn't like my wife's sister's husband. So we ultimately went with some neighbors that they had raised good kids, and we were like, that's who we want, if that makes sense. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Seen that quite a bit.
Okay, good, good. And then it could stay in the same community and kind of stuff. I mean, it's really weird looking back at that because time flies, man. I'm getting old. You want to talk a little insurance strategies? Well, first and foremost, I want to agree with what Chad said about estate planning. Time to do it is now and get that relationship going, because it is a process. Now, let's talk insurance strategies. You were bringing this one up. California's got something very unique. I do stories for the local news all the time about Nationwide or State Farm or cutting homeowners insurance. What are you hearing from your side of the fence as a financial planner and California insurance issues?
Well, we're getting calls all the time from people that, hey, I've got to notice that my homeowner's insurance is not being renewed. And so, you know, a lot of states, because California wasn't allowing certain risk modeling and things like that to occur, a lot of companies have just pulled out of California altogether. And so the issue is becoming, for those that, you know, I've still seen a lot of people wanting to retire when they retire, leaving the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And I will say that this problem probably will get fixed and play out over time. And one of the things to think about for those that are retiring, and I want to move somewhere else in California, but where I'm wanting to move to is also having massive homeowners insurance problems. What's nice about, there's two things, right? When you sell your primary residence that you've owned for over a certain period of time, usually it's two out of the last 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. You can exclude the first $500,000 of gain that you have, but you'll pay capital gains taxes on the rest. And now under Prop 19, you have 2 years to be able to, you know, sell your existing home and use that lower property tax base to move anywhere else in California. So if you're not really sure where you want to move, or where you want to move is having massive insurance problems, you know, maybe you kind of float around and rent for a little bit and figure out where do you want to land if you're moving out of, you know, the Bay Area and want to move, you know, somewhere south, let's say, and see if this all plays out a little bit. Because recently somebody put an offer, I know, in a home that was outside of the Bay Area where they're moving, and in closer to Southern California, but they had to put a contingency on it to say, you know, here's the offer, but I need 17 days to see if I can even get this thing insured. So a lot of people losing their basic insurance and are having to go to like Pure or Chubb. I will say, if anybody has a relationship with USAA, that's anybody military in their family. Mm-hmm. If USAA can't insure it, they can outsource to those companies as well. So it's an interesting and rough time to be a, you know, property casualty insurance agent in the state of California when you have all these companies changing. We had these other clients that they needed to put their rental property that was in Petaluma into their living trust. And so they just notified the insurance company, hey, this insurance policy really needs to be to name our living trust, because that's what actually owns the asset. And the company then said, oh, well, we're you changed your policy, so we're canceling you effective immediately. And so they had to argue with, get the agent on. It took a couple of days to say, this is not a change of policy. This is just, when you have an asset that's owned by a living trust, it's not really a change of ownership. It's still you. It's still your tax ID number that owns it. It's just a registration thing. And so those are the kind of issues that we're dealing with. So the rules that California put in place, and then the fires on top of it, essentially screwed up the insurance industry altogether in the state of California. So something is going to have to change drastically. And, you know, if you got 2 years to use that Prop 19, you could probably be willing to bet it'll probably settle out a little bit in the next 2 years.
And a lot of what Chad's talking about is what financial planners do. They get all your documents, they hold them in one secure online vault that you can get to when you need them, whether it be your taxes, your real estate issues, your insurance policies, your taxes, tax projections. It's all there. It's a really cool idea of working with a CFP, is getting all your financial information working together. You can meet CFP Chad Burton coming up Thursday, May the 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Palo Alto Elks Lodge. It's wealth preservation and retirement planning. Sign up at robblackshow.com or chadburton.com. There's lots of good stuff at chadburton.com to peruse.
Don't want to work forever? Check out the Retirement Planning Guide on robblack.com. That's robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
My financial brain gets its love and teaching when I sit next to CFP Chad Burton. We talk financial planning issues. When I was a younger man, I never thought I was going to be wildly successful, and I've done pretty well in my life. I'm very modestly saying that I've done really well. And When I was younger, I never thought I was going to be in a position to give money away charitably. And at a recent fundraiser, I was able to raise the paddle for a big donation tied towards a soccer field. Felt pretty good. I don't know how tax efficient that was. Let's talk about some of the charitable planning strategies and how we can use them to financially benefit ourselves while doing the charitable thing and helping others. Chad, what are some ideas we should be chatting about?
Well, first of all, if you raised that paddle, Rob, I hope you did not write a check. I hope you'd say, okay, hey, charity or nonprofit organization, 503C or whatever, and a lot of schools have one. Mm-hmm. Instead of writing you a check, I'm going to donate shares of my highly appreciated Apple stock. Because when you transfer the stock directly to the charity, you still get a tax deduction. And then when the charity sells the stock, they don't pay the taxes on the gain. And then you can take your cash, if you still want to own that same stock, just buy it back, and you've upgraded your cost basis and you've gotten rid of a 23.8% federal tax and anywhere from a 9 to 13% state tax that you still benefited the charity. They still got everything, 100% of every dollar. You just cut the IRS out of the situation legally. So one of the first things that our advisors ask for is a tax return, because I can look at a tax return and I can look at your itemized deductions and note how much you're giving to charity. Are there better ways to do that that benefit you and your family? What are you getting from dividends and interest? How is that? Where are your assets being held? I can see all that on your tax return and your different schedules, your Schedule D, your Schedule E, or I mean, sorry, Schedule B. And really start to put together a puzzle. So if I have a tax return and a couple of investment account statements, I can really look at everything and come up with some of those strategies.
Which is one of the first things you ask people for when they're looking for a financial planner. You say, give me your taxes, give me your financial statements. You plug them into the software. The software kind of helps you parse and see all the everything in a clear, singular way. That's one of the advantages of working with a CFP. But finish.
Yeah, I mean, and you hit it right on, Rob, because we have a portal that, you know, we talk about that you hear the ad all the time, our financial planning portal, which takes all of your accounts and everything in live time. You can see it all in one place, but it runs it through the financial planning projections that we do. Mm-hmm. So when I have somebody that's really serious that, hey, I want to work with one of your advisors or you, we basically give them a shell of that portal. They can upload either Excel file of all their positions by account plus a tax return. And we can use all that, plug it in. And so that when we're doing the first meeting, which is a meeting to get to know each other, is this a good relationship? We want to make sure that we can add value to people's lives by taking them on as a client. So it makes sense for everyone. Sure. And so part of that first initial process is, let's look at what you have. We'll tell you how much it's going to cost and what we think we can do for you. So if we can get all of that information before the first meeting, even if we don't end up engaging, your people still get a ton out of that initial meeting. Maybe it's just hey, you're doing great. Keep what you're doing. Or maybe it's here's a bunch of things that we can do for you. And this is going to definitely be a great relationship. Either way, it's part of the initial process. It doesn't cost money because we got to make sure that it's a good long-term relationship. That's what everybody's looking for, right? Whether it's love life or financial life.
That's one of the benefits of coming to these events, whether they're My Pints and Portfolios or they're your wealth preservation, retirement planning seminars, is that we do offer, we'll collect those documents through a secure download. We'll give you some feedback. We'll see if there's a fit. If you can't see value from that initial reaction, that's the issue. But you'll typically find that CFPs can help you. Any other thoughts you want to hit real quick in this segment?
Charity-wise, so there's other options too that are so great. Donor advised funds, Fidelity and Schwab have them. So let's say you have a certain amount of charity that you want. I'm always giving $5,000-$10,000 a year. Well, you can, in one fell swoop, donate 5-10 years worth of that goal into a donor advised fund by transferring some appreciated stock into the donor advised fund. You get an immediate tax deduction. You can sell it, reinvest it in a more conservative portfolio, and then dole the money out to charity over time. Once you're age 70 and a half, your charitable gifting should probably switch and come out of your IRA, because you can give up to $100,000 a year out of your IRA to charities without paying taxes. And then there's so many advantages of charitable remainder trusts. If you want to diversify without paying capital gains on a highly concentrated stock portfolio, create income while you're alive and have a certain amount go to charity when you die, that charitable remainder trust is one of my favorite planning techniques. So anybody that has way too much of one stock should consider that. If they have a concentration issue, but they also have charitable intent, it is a fantastic strategy.
That's good to know. And again, these are things that they're not in the newspaper and they're advanced concepts that you get to educate yourself on every year, and or probably be more products coming out. The donor advised funds are something I never heard of until I met you. And I think I've only heard of them in the last 10 years. Does that sound about right?
They've been around for a long, long time. I think they've just gotten a little bit more popular and easy to use. Like Fidelity and Schwab both have really good ones. You know, easy to set up, easy to transfer stock into them. So that's great. I think maybe
what I'm saying is now that I'm getting wealthier and closer to retirement, I'm actually paying attention to the things that I used to go, I'll do that later.
Well, it's so interesting too, because those people that I have, clients are, most of them are very charitably inclined. And what they're doing with donating their time to charities and money, it's like they just continue to network and benefit in other ways from it that make what they gave away seem like peanuts. So it's that whole, you know, what you put out in the universe, you get back. It really works.
I like that. There's some truth to that too. You can meet CFP Chad Burton at a live event Thursday, May the 9th, coming up, Palo Alto Elks Lodge. You can sign up for the event at chadburton.com. It's Wealth Preservation Retirement Planning. I promise you, you'll get something out of this event, whether it's taxes and tax efficiencies and retirement cost and how to maintain them, doing your portfolio transitions from wealth accumulation to wealth management. That's super important and needy. The retirement products that are good, the retirement products that are okay, the retirement products that are probably not going to get you deep into retirement. You can meet CFP Chad Burton to set up that initial consultation where he'll collect information from you and give you some feedback as well. The big event is Thursday, May 9th, 6:30, 8:30 at the Elks Lodge. Sign up at Rob Black Show, chadburton.com.
Maybe you feel like you're in good shape for retirement, but have you really taken everything into account? Find out how you're really doing at a wealth preservation and retirement planning event, May 9th in Palo Alto, hosted by Rob Black and CFP Chad Burton of EP Wealth Advisors. Rob will provide timely commentary, and Chad will share specific strategies for taxes, income, long-term care, safe money, retirement products, alternative investments, estate protection goals, and more. If you have at least $500,000 in investable assets and want to retire better, pass on your estate, and minimize taxes, this event is for you. Find out if you're on the right track at this free wealth preservation and retirement planning event. That's Thursday evening, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Space is limited, so sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.